time today is August 2nd, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our weekly business session. Commissioner Morgan is not with us yet or this morning. It's kind of interesting as we start out, there's a particular couple that joins us, has for a long time, 6.5 years since I've been on the board. And although I won't wait for a commissioner to start the weekly business session, I'm reluctant to get started without the Fords being in our audience. However, they are in the building, and so we will get started with the Pledge of Allegiance. So please rise, remove your hats, and we'll get underway.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Special people that join us every week and almost at every single one of our meetings. Talking about special people, we've got recognition of employees here as agenda item number one, and then item number two is a public hearing and the second reading and adoption of ordinance number 2017-001. Item number three is request and comments from citizens. I should say that under item number two, you'll get a chance to speak on that item before the board takes action on it. You'll also get an opportunity to speak on any item you choose under item number three. And then number four is approval of the consent calendar. Five is other business by the board, and then matters from commissioners. If you need an agenda, those are, I think, are in the back in the entry hall. Good morning, Commissioner Moore.
Morning.
Welcome. We're going to start out with number one. We've got recognition of employees. Annette Sorensen is the first one on the list. Community Corrections, 20 years with Josephine County. Quite a feat. And Commissioner DeYoung, as liaison to Community Corrections, will facilitate the proceedings and grant recognition.
Annette, if you'll walk up to the front up here.
Guy Rand, you want to come up as well?
Sure.
Come up here, here.
Anywhere you'd like. Wherever the cameras want to go.
That's perfect.
After 20 years of long service, we're going to give you a pin. And also a certificate of appreciation for your long, outstanding service to Josephine County. Well, thank you very much for your service.
Thank you. I've just been very blessed and very privileged to work with the people that I knew for the last 20 years. I've learned so much. We're here for our longevity because we believe in what we do, and we believe in how we do it. So thank you very much.
We are blessed as well just to have people like Annette Sorensen working for Community Corrections. We really appreciate your professionalism, your dedication, everything that you do for Josephine County. So thank you.
Thank you. What a great team of people. Annette, thank you for your service. It's a pretty special place we have here in Josephine County. Our team is a lot different than a lot of places in the state. We're real close, we're real tight, and I think that's what makes us special and really successful. So we've got a couple of other people that aren't here this morning that we want to pay special recognition to. Michael Rostrum of Juvenile Justice for 20 years, and Rosemary Siebert, DA's office, of 20 years. So 60 years of service right here with these three people recognized. I think we owe them a round of applause for the record. And just
I just want to comment. I know all three. I've worked with all three in my career. And what's amazing is all three on day one of year 20 are still contributing 100%. And they're all still actively seeking ways of making the systems better and doing the best to serve the public. So it's not just 20 years that I got a job and I'm just sitting in and I'm holding a chair. It's quite the opposite. They're in that chair because they do love what they do and they're doing it well and are serving our community well. So to all three, congratulations.
I'd like to just say that, you know, 20 years, and I think probably the last 10 has been the roughest years for Josephine County's ever experienced. And yet all, and it's not just these three employees. There's a bunch of employees that work for Josephine County, work for the citizens, And they toughed it out. They just said, you know, we have a dedication to this county. And come heck or high water, we're going to be here. And that that sense of stick-to-itiveness, that resonates really well up here with the board. So thank you again from all of us.
Great. All righty. Now we have to do the hard stuff, the business. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming this morning. And we're going to move on. We're going to open the public hearing at 9:05, and I'm going to entertain a motion to read the second reading of Ordinance Number 2017-001 by title only. I appreciate somebody doing that.
I would move that we can read the ordinance by title only, second reading.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0 to have the second reading done by title only. So there's a public hearing here in the second reading of Ordinance Number 2017-001, an ordinance amending the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, is originally adopted and subsequently amended to implement certain changes related to new definitions, creating and adding new sections, 72.060.C and 72.060.D, clarifying accessory structure standards, 73.030.C, prescribing composition of walls, fences, and screens, 77.010 and 77.020, lighting, 83.020.C, setting limits for grade and fill, amending the text of 72.020.A, structures, and 73.030.A.2 and 73.030.B.2, fences, and 75.060.E, restricting exterior lighting. Just as a reminder, our first reading on this issue was held July 19th, 2017. We have Ms. Schmelzer here from our Community Development to present.
My name is Julie Schmelzer, I'm the Director of Community Development. And I just want to go through a little bit of history on this set of ordinances that we're looking at. Last June, it was June 8th, that the Palmer Board directed me to come up with rules for rural residential development in the RR zones, looking specifically at fences and setbacks and more things of similar nature. When I got into it, I realized that a lot of the issues were actually larger than the rural residential zones, so we brought forward a series of amendments. The first public hearing on those amendments was before the Rural Area Planning Commission, and it was on October 31st. That committee decided to discuss it again the following week, which was November 7th. And then the board, as you know, only has to have two public hearings on an item, which would include your first and second reading. But the board decided or chose to have additional hearings to engage the public. It was really our first time delving into marijuana issues, and we wanted to make sure everybody was heard. So the board had a public hearing, the Board of Commissioners had a public hearing on January 30th. They had another public hearing on February 7th. They've had workshops to refine what is before us. The decision was to bring all of the amendments down into four groups and bring the first group forward. And that is what we're going to be discussing today, is the first group from those original set of proposed amendments. As Commissioner Harris said, the first reading, which was also a public hearing, was July 19th, and then our second one is today, August 7th. So I'll just briefly go through these. When we were working on the ordinance, we found that there were some definitions lacking, one of which was fence. We do propose rules for fences. We currently have rules for fences, but the ordinance lacked a definition. So we came up with a definition for fence and then for site obscuring the fence. Next, we looked at accessory structure standards. And at the current time, the code does not require a permit if the fence is less than 7 feet in height. But you kind of have to read between the lines. So we made it very clear by saying fences less than 7 feet don't need a development permit. Plain and simple, there's no question about that. Just a note, although they don't require a permit, they still have to meet the requirements of the code. Next, we went into the RR1. are 2.5 and lot zoned RR5 that are less than 2.5 acres. And we looked at how could we minimize overdevelopment on these smaller lots or these zones that allow for smaller lots. And how could we also reduce overcrowding, which is something that is addressed in our comprehensive plan. So we want to make sure we're not overcrowding in these areas. And then also looking at to make sure we're not having too much runoff going on to adjacent properties. So in those zones, we proposed that the cumulative size, that means all of them, the size of all of the buildings on the lot should not exceed 50% of the lot area. We also did a GIS test where we randomly pulled up small parcels to see if any of those were at or near the 50%, and they were not. So it is. So this rule really is intended to minimize those that really aren't intended to overdevelop the property. Next, we looked for the accessory structures. We looked at indoor lighting, and we proposed no indoor lighting associated with a marijuana grow shall be visible from adjacent dwellings between dusk and dawn. And the reason for that was we've had a lot of complaints from neighbors about greenhouses or as we'll get to later, security systems, et cetera, that really are lighting up the neighborhood. And we did discuss, if you recall, looking at, you know, should it be visible in a half mile or a quarter mile or something. But we really said, no, let's really look at, in this particular case, at the adjacent dwellings and make sure that they do not have light pollution in their area. Then we got into the fences. And at the current time, fences have to have front, side, and rear setbacks. The front setbacks are really intended for vision clearance and safety purposes. So we didn't do anything with those. But when it comes to the side and rear setbacks, they really were causing a problem in the community. For example, in some of the zones, there's a 30-foot setback. So if each neighbor wants a fence, they have to go 30 feet from the setback, meaning you basically have 60 feet between fences of no man's land. And 60 feet is actually the width of a road from right-of-way to right-of-way. So it didn't make sense to have that no man's land. It also made it very difficult to maintain the fences. So we decided to get rid of the rear and side yard setback. And it is for cyber-screening fences only, and the reason why it says is written that way is because non-cyber-screening already do not have a setback. So it's only the cyber-screening that has the We also look to address a lot of the complaints and fire hazards that we have. At the current time, as you've heard me say multiple times, we have fences made out of tarp that tear, blow in the wind. Neighbors complain, they fall down. We've had cars stacked on top of each other to create fences. We have appliances stacked on top of each other. We have garage doors lined up to create fences. We have root walls, which are a fire hazard. We have brush piles, which are serving as fences. So we decided we really needed to clean that up and say, no. You know, we're getting the objections, the neighbors don't like them, they're not being maintained, and they're causing a fire hazard. And in our county, fire hazard is a big thing that we look at. So basically, the fences have to be made of wood or similar non-man-made material, temporary man-made. Also, the county does not require fences, and we do not require vegetative screens. But if a vegetative screen is required, it has to be maintained, and it has to be capable of screening the marijuana plants within 3 years. In other words, a lot of times people think, oh, if I have to screen my property, I'm going to go plant some trees that I got from the Boy Scouts and let them go, and they die. That's not what this says. It says they have to be tall enough that they're going to be able to actually do their job, which is screening the plants. And they have to be maintained so they do not die.
Ms. Meltzer, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think it's a really important point. The objections that we've heard probably for the last several years around the fences popping up all over Josephine County, why is the county requiring these fences in the first place? And I think it's important for everybody to know we shouldn't miss an opportunity to iterate the fact that fences are not a requirement to the county as far as in being included and associated with cannabis marijuana grows. That's a state requirement, and it used to be a requirement of every operation, and now it's part of a security plan in a lot of cases. And so the 8-foot fence that was requiring engineering and all of this stuff, I think those rules have been refined at the state to be consistent with a security plan. It may not need to be 8 feet. If they're under 7 feet, ours doesn't. You know, all those things, we're trying to work out those inconsistencies with state, but we are not requiring fences. So a lot of people come to us and say, why don't you just stop doing that? And say, we never did in the first place, not our deal. We're just trying to refine the laws on our books when a fence is required, perhaps by OLCC.
That is correct. Currently, we do not require fences, except in some circumstances, like a conditional use permit for a junkyard, perhaps,
right.
We would require it. But when it comes to residential or marijuana production sites, we do not and have never required a fence. We were simply running into issues where the state was requiring an 8-foot fence, and then that conflicted with county, and then it also county rules, and then it also conflicted with the state building code, because the state building code says you regulate over 7 feet. So this basically says if you have to put up a fence for some reason, whatever reason, these are the rules you're going to apply. Also, we looked at shade cloths for shading plants, not for use as a fence, and we said that they could be allowed on a temporary basis but cannot exceed 3 months. Again, we ran into problems where they are left up all year, they're hanging down, people are objecting to them. And one of the things we do with community development is we look at more than planning and safety and economic development and housing, but we also look at developing a community and developing a culture where people are proud of the place they live and are willing to get engaged and help improve it. Next, we go to the parking and lighting. At the current time, we only have a standard for lighting associated with parking, and it didn't really address the night sky. So it says all exterior lighting, including lighting from security systems, has to be shielded and cast light downward, so light is not cast onto adjacent properties or into the night sky. That's the only place our lighting was addressed in our code right now, is under those parking standards. So we also, to make sure people didn't have to hunt through the whole code to find things and to make it more user-friendly, we also created a section on lighting. And it says, again, all outdoor lighting, including lighting from security systems, has to be shielded and cast light downward, so as light is not cast onto adjacent properties and into the night sky. And I think it's really important to realize this is not marijuana specific. This is countywide. This is something that we were seeing issues with and people complaining about their neighbor's lights, and there really wasn't much we could do at the current time. Then earlier we had talked about the indoor lighting associated with the marijuana grow. Again, it's reiterated in the lighting section to make it very clear. This one is marijuana specific. Now, indoor lighting used in or by an indoor marijuana growing area or indoor marijuana processing facility shall be visible from adjacent dwelling or cast light onto adjacent properties or up into the night sky between dusk and dawn. We looked at erosion control. Originally, we didn't even think we'd have to, but as the year went on, or as time went by, we've seen people buy mountains and cut the top off and change the grade and put in roads and clear things. And we've had a lot of complaints from neighbors. It's become a real issue because we've got runoff coming down onto adjacent properties. We've got runoff going into creeks, which is now speed, which is carrying sediment, which makes the water elevation higher, which then increases water flow and flooding. So we said we really have to do something about the erosion. So we basically said if you're going to have in excess of 10 cubic yards on your property, you have to use best management practices to control the runoff. Best management practices are standards in the industry, which basically would mean straw bales, silk fences, etc. And again, that's not just for marijuana, that's countywide. No filling and grading on a slope greater than 15% without a stormwater management plan. That is very similar to other rules we have in place when you're looking at land divisions and things of that interest. We just want to reiterate that right here. And then we did add berms. We added information about berms because some people are building berms and we have complaints where the berms are actually washing out onto the neighbor's property. So we said, okay, if you're going to have a berm, it has to be set back from the property line equal to the distance the structure would, to help minimize that runoff. Now, if there's runoff, it'll stay ideally on that landowner's property. And then it also needs to be seeded so we don't just have big dirt piles laying around. And that is it for this first set of amendments. Like I said, we've had public hearings since October 31st on this, and this is the final hearing we have on it, unless the board chooses to delay the action. Any questions?
I do just want to point out, I do see the amendments in the text that we requested last time, specifically towards light emitting to the sky. And that portion is in there, indoor lighting as well as the exterior, so thank you.
Yes, correct.
So I think that's important to reference the fact that there were minor tweaks, not changing the intent of from first reading to this reading that we have today. If you change the intent of a specific thing from the first reading, you have to start the process over, and it didn't meet that threshold. Of the intent was still there. It was just really clarifying that it wasn't supposed to go up into the night sky. It was supposed to go straight down, and I think Commissioner DeYoung made those good suggestions. So thanks for
just a point to note on that. Yes, it was in other areas, but not in one specific area, so it really was just making it consistent.
Good.
So there was no question to the user of what the rules are.
I think the original intent of our instruction or the previous board's instruction to your program was the idea that we were looking for a cleanup, clarification, and making it easy to people who are trying to do some of these things to comply with the code, mitigate the challenges that we're seeing popping up. But I don't think that these were specific. The whole intent of this round of text amendments was really the non-controversial nature. There's a second round that's coming that's really probably more marijuana specific, and those are going to hopefully mitigate an additional challenges that we're seeing out there in the county. We are probably the ground zero for growing, and that element around the state, and the state is not necessarily keeping up with these kinds of issues at a state level for their code, building or otherwise, and so it's kind of incumbent upon us to do that in addition to our regular work that we have being done in the community development program. And so that's also something that people need to take into consideration. We didn't add any staff at the county level to address marijuana issues. We just don't have the resources for it. So far this year, we've been blessed to have, from the 3% tax that we, Josephine County citizens, endorsed last November, we've generated around $11,000 for the first quarter. That doesn't pay for a new person and any program, let alone how it was outlined within that that tax measure that was passed by the voters. So we're really trying to scramble together, as tight as Josephine County is, to address these challenges. And I just have to say I appreciate the community's engagement, but also patience on how we refine this. It's also important that the industry understand that as a result of not having those resources ahead of time to get ahead of this curve, there are going to be people who are caught between the crosshairs when we're making changes to our rural land development code. And I mentioned it before, I've been on this board for 6.5 years, going on 7. No one who's a grower, either on the medical or recreational side, very few have ever come in and asked, what's your perspective on where you could see land use codes going in the future? So I just we're going to be doing our diligence on this. We're going to be trying to hear both sides, as we have with numerous hearings. And this one included, we're going to take public comment on what we're doing so far. And we will do that with every round of RLDC text amendments as we go forward. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmelzer. Any comments?
No, I just appreciate all your hard work on that, Julie. We've been back and forth, and you've held up really well.
Okay. I think at this time we're going to open it up for public comment at 9:24. So you'll be provided 3 minutes. You'll only get to speak on this subject alone. There'll be 3 minutes provided under number 3 to speak on anything you want. But as this is a public hearing, it's really important to conform to the subject matter that we've been discussing and that 3 minutes. So we're fair to everybody who's ever come before the board. So gentlemen, first row. Second row, but the first one that matters to the people in it. Please state your name and general locale. It doesn't have to be your street address, just so we can kind of roll it up.
I'm Cedar Gray. I live in Vegas. Good day, commissioners. Thank you very much for your time and attention. I'm here today to discuss cannabis regulation in Josephine County and to invite you to tour our OLCC and OHA and ODA licensed facilities in Williams. I'm a sixth generation Oregonian who moved to Williams 20 years ago. My wife and I raised our four children there. I've served on the Williams Citizens Advisory Council as president of Sugarloaf Community Association and as president of Oregon Center Brown Growers Guild. I'm currently serving on multiple state of Oregon rules advisory committees for the development of cannabis and hemp regulation. My wife and I own Siskiyou Sungrown, a cannabis company that produces medical products under OLCC, ODA, and OHA licenses. Our products are now in over 170 stores. Our farm cultivates organically in the full sun and the native soil. We hire local employees first. All of the equity holders in our company are local families. We have 16 full-time employees. We are developing an employee healthcare program, and we have very good relationships with our neighbors. We have two primary concerns with currently proposed regulation. The proposal from the county to ban recreational cannabis production on RR5 zoning without grandfathering current operations.
That subject isn't up on this. We're not doing that today. Just to refine your comments, we're not discussing that. That element isn't on the docket today. Only the items that she went over, but I don't want to use your time. Go ahead.
Okay. Can I complete my statement?
Absolutely.
And the attempts by the Williams CAC to restrict recreational cannabis farming on resource lands. We own both resource lands and RR5 property. Farmers in Williams overwhelmingly oppose additional restrictions and limitations on our farmlands. We are an agricultural community and farming is already an imperiled livelihood. Additional obstacles and burdens will force some families out of business. The right to farm law, the Farm Bureau, and established local tradition all support farming on exclusive farm use property. If the ban on RR5 OLCC production does not grandfather in currently licensed operations, then our family's business will likely fail, resulting in the loss of employment for several local families. Our farmland has already been approved by the county with CAC support for OLCC production. Now, in our second year of successful operation, we are very alarmed about the prospect of being forced out of business by regulations intended to target offensive development. The CAC efforts are intended to stop the development projects of large out-of-state corporations who operate in disregard of local sensitivities regarding light and noise pollution and treatment of Class 1 soils. However, the wide net cast by the proposed regulations will lower property values and punish all local families who are working to create legal agricultural businesses. Siskiyou Sungrown does not support the agricultural models that involve significant light and noise pollution and degradation of Class 1 soils.
So I'm going to... That was your time.
Okay.
The subject is really, really specific here. It isn't about RR. That's another subject being referred to the Rural Planning Commission. It'll be a subject that the Cannabis Advisory Committee will weigh in on, and it's probably a six-month start. This one basically ends today with the second reading on the subject matter that Ms. Schmelzer went over. So RR5 is not included. Only the regulations that she went over, the text amendments, and that's really what the testimony. I don't want to restrict anybody, but as a public hearing on this subject, that's exactly what we need to be hearing information on. That lighting, the fence setback requirements, obscuring site fences, everything she talked about, and that's fine. It's confusing, and I can get that, but that's what the subject is here today. And so,
I support the light regulations. Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, Cedar. Thank you for coming here today.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Mr. Ford.
34-136 Ferry Road amendments passed. The importance of these amendments and regulations that you're doing today are quite clear. I am a member of Josephine Tumwater Conservation District, and we work with when we get problems with runoff. Sedimentation in our streams, and it is becoming a problem in Josephine County, and we need to make sure that we do these grows the right way. There are ways to do it that will mitigate runoff, and it's really, most cases, not that hard to do. The second thing is the fencing. As Ms. Nelson mentioned, these fences were constructed with full cars and refrigerators and whatever else they put in there, they do affect our water quality and our soil quality as those things start to deteriorate. And the fences that are made out of wood waste. All you have to do is walk out this afternoon and you'll see the problem with that. If we get 115 tomorrow, those are fire dangers. And they will eventually cause a problem, and we need to be restricted on any type of property in our county. Thank you.
Mr. Gregg, I wanted to offer the opportunity under item number 3. You can speak on any subject you want. If I didn't allow you enough time to get through your statement, I think that would be the perfect time to address it. So I encourage you to stick around for just a few minutes. I think we'll be done with this, and you can move on to that. Anyone else on this subject here today? Yes, Mr. Hart.
Morning, Commissioners. Bob Hart, planning consultant, Jackson, Josephine County.
You're way off subject, Mr. Hart. We're going to have to. I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Please proceed. Good morning.
For the most part, I think this is a good step forward. There's a few minor tweaks that I need to see. I deal with ordinances all the time. I think Julie's probably as frustrated with the ordinance as I am, especially with some of the conflicts or things that have been omitted. One of the things that I see is 50% coverage standard. As she said, that there is no instances that she looked through the GIS that shows that that's even being approached. So this is another just layer of stuff that our original zoning ordinance was 76 pages. We're over 300 pages now, and adding things that don't seem to be necessary just kind of clog things up. We already have a standard on accessory structures, that especially on these small ones, that if you're less than an acre, you can't do more than 2,500 square feet of accessory structures. Even if you have a 3,000 square foot house, you're at 5,000 square feet, you're less than a quarter of what this standard would be. I think there's enough protections in place that we don't need this 50% coverage standard in the ordinance. Also looking at Article 72, when it talks about accessory structures, it talks about that lights and marijuana grows. We have the exact same wordage in Article 77. Do we really need the same standards in two places in the ordinance? It just because one says accessory structures, one says everything. It's just kind of confusing when you're having different standards in different places, and I'm just trying to keep things straight in my head. Article 73 that deals with fences, when I look at the construction of the ordinance here, it says this is what applies to residential zones, and this is what applies to industrial commercial zones. There's nothing in the ordinance, the way it's constructed now, that talks about resource zones. So how do we deal with those? Is that something that does not apply at all in resource zones? And one of the crazy things about Josephine County is what we call our serpentine zone. It's one of those things that's neither fish nor fowl. It's not good for resource use, but it's not good for residential use either, and it just kind of falls through the cracks. I don't know where it applies in the construction of this ordinance. So I think that needs to be fixed. Other than that, I don't think there's another issue other than the berms. It says everything has to meet the same setback as a structure. In resource zones, that's 30 feet. I can see it meet a 10-foot setback, so you're not right on the line, but starting a berm back 30 feet, I don't know that that's necessary in resource zones. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to help. I think there's just a few minor tweaks, and this should be ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Hart.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay.
Why did you wait till the second reading, Mr. Hart?
I talked about these the first time.
No, just the 50% one. The berm one was interesting. Anyone else? Yes. I'm in the second row.
I'm Kevin McCabe. My property is by the Robertson Bridge area. I just wanted to say to be careful not to pass anything that hurts the small farm but allows the large farm just to walk right over it. small farmer is having a hard time competing with these really large operations that are coming in with good funding. We just want to be able to survive in this competitive environment. So I'm just asking you please not to single out the small farm or maybe even help out the small farm in some of these situations.
Anyone else? Yeah. Don't be shy, just keep it on point.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Dean, and I live in North Grants Pass, Merlin area. Mine's more questions in regards to this reading. If it does get passed, when is it implemented? I remember the last meeting, something said about the next grow season. And then because our resources to implement or what's the word I want to use? To watch that these are being implemented. As a concerned citizen, how long do we give to see whether or not these people are complying to the new ordinances? Because some might not necessarily be quote unquote extremely visible from a main road, but it could be from a side road of where I live, that I could still see it being non-compliant. When do we give that time, you know, being that the complaints have been so numerous to the county that I don't want to over-embed more too. So
good.
That's
we'll answer.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I'll bring it back to the board. I'll answer that last one. It's a 90-day time period. So all ordinances go through the same process of being adopted by the County Board of Commissioners. We have, by statute, we're 13 days, no less, for each particular reading. And so the first reading can't be done. The city can do both their first and second reading on the same night, which really doesn't seem very logical to me. It just, why would you have two readings if they're at the same time? Ours are 13 days apart, it no less than that. And then 90 days after that is when the board will actually adopt the ordinance if it hasn't been referred to the voters. That's the whole point of that 90 days. It's not for changes in the ordinance. It really cannot be changed from the second reading to adoption. It can be referred to the voters. And it's a pretty low threshold of signatures. So if there's something controversial in an ordinance, you might remember there's been some ordinances in the past, passed by a previous board, that were referred to the voters and were struck down. And that ends the process. In order for the board to do anything around that subject, they've got to start over and go through another first and second reading, probably through the Rural Land Development Commission, and then another 90 days. And if it passes that gauntlet, then the board can adopt it at a weekly business session. So that hopefully answers yours. I don't know that we're hitting any specific things about small farms. It's kind of innocuous. It's more just a broad scope. Most things apply to everybody. And so at this round,
hits me much harder.
At this round, we'll have to see what happens after this Rural Land Development Commission and goes through the next step. So I appreciate you bringing it to the board about the 30-foot setback. And maybe Mishmelzer can address that last point in resource zones as far as berms are concerned, that setback requirement.
Sure. You know, we could go through the ordinance and we could put out setbacks for every single possible use. It would get quite confusing, quite difficult to administer. So we stick with a structural setback in most cases for everyone. You know, you've got to keep in mind when you're looking at a 30-foot setback for a berm on a resource property, you have to remember the property, most of them, the majority of them, are much larger than in a rural residential property. So by scale, it's consistent. You know, a 10-foot setback on a residential property because the lot is much smaller really is no different than a 30-foot setback on a much larger piece of property. So I would like
to... I think the intent of the setback for all of these is that there's oftentimes not real clear lines as far as where properties are. And so in large resource zones, probably to mitigate challenges, which is exactly the whole point of the code, is to mitigate challenges between neighbors. It's just probably wise to put it a few feet back from where you think the line is. if you wanted to work out something less than that, I'd probably entertain it if the line had been surveyed for you to put a berm up to your property line. I don't mind looking at that as a code amendment if it's a surveyed line. But otherwise, I've seen so many different instances all over the county where people think the line is there. They didn't have it surveyed, and it's actually not where everybody intended. My parents' property, we've got a line that's 50 feet at least off historically. The old fence that's been there for 100 years is way off where the line actually is once it's been surveyed. So 30 feet isn't as big, you're right, on a big 100-acre piece of property. So.
Right, and we are trying to keep that zone on so your runoff is retained on your own property. So just a couple other things to comment on. Why we have the light information in two different places.
Before you go on, nothing in here says the berm has to be 30 feet.
It has to meet, it's the same setback as a structure.
Eve is saying in a resource zone, the setback for a structure is 30 feet, not 10. It's 10 in rural residential zone properties. Didn't address the serpentine issue, and I think we need code clarification in our code. It is not a resource zone, in my opinion. There's no element of it that lends itself, and that's the designation. Resource zones minimum are 40 acres in woodlot resource. It's not even close having a serpentine 15 minimum for a home. And from my perspective, the serpentine that I've seen, I don't know what it would be a resource for. It isn't EFU, it isn't woodlot resource, it doesn't grow trees, and it doesn't grow anything else. Well, that's different then. So
comment on the serpentine is we have run into some confusion on that because we do know from our research that serpentine is not something you want to disturb. You don't want to go way down into the ground. ODOT is wrestling with rules right now on serpentine soils. So it is something on the to-do list. Something that we as a county really need to look at. Either getting rid of the zone and making it residential or doing something with it. But at the current time, that is not the focus of these amendments. That would have to be a future one. Some agricultural fences are exempt as by state statute. So we don't have specific fences rules just for agriculture. We are covered in other areas, though, where we talk about the need for permits and the type of permits. As for having the lighting information in two sections of the plan, we run into people violations all the time, and they're like, I didn't see that in the code, or I wasn't aware of that. As you know, we are trying to make this code as user-friendly as possible. If you miss it in one section, you can find it in the lighting section. We are just trying to help the consumer. As far as the 50% accessory structures already being in the code, or size limitations already in the code, as I explained at the last reading of this these proposals, and I'll just repeat the same language again, is we do have regulations based on the cumulative footprint, or floor area of a building, which means you're counting the first and the second floor. This is designed to address footprint. In other words, what is creating, you have more footprint, you have more runoff, versus floor area would be a first, second, third floor is all counted. That's cumulative. So if you can only have 900 square feet under the other section, let's say you can only have 900 square feet, and you have a building with 300 square feet on each floor, you cover three floors, that's your 900, you're done. So this addresses something totally different. Not floor area, it's footprint. Any questions on that?
No, it's just the fact that, you know, 1 acre, 45,000 feet or whatever, our degree of being close to that is pretty far off. So whether or not, you know, what's really should be talked about is the 50% element is probably not where we would want to be, or maybe we already have that. Maybe it's no more than 30% or 20%. I think that would be the place where we would need to look at that number. 50% might be off, and those are just the ones that you looked at. Even if there are violations in the code right now, they're not going to be asked to tear down the structure. They're going to be grandfathered in as a non-conforming use, and I think it's just looking for whatever possible proposal that could be out there in the future, not what's on the books right now. The efficacy might not be so great right now, but I think you also want to plan for the future, which I think one of the reasons we haven't done as well as we had. We didn't have a lot of time to plan for some of these things. So,
if you recall, one of the earlier proposals did propose that we regulate impervious surface ratios. In other words, depending on the size of the lot, depends how much you can cover. That was removed, but we have had a lot of issues with runoff destroying properties, causing substantial damage due to the lack of regulation of impervious surface ratios upstream and due to the lack of proper watershed management. That is something that will be tackled, and I've actually talked with members of the state about how best we can do that. But that's a long term. We've got some immediate amendments, such as housing and some of those things that we have to take care of first. But impervious surface regulation is something I'll tell you right now I'm an advocate for, because it only helps with our waterways and protects properties. But that's for another day.
Great. Okay. Anything from the board? All righty. Well, I think that concludes our item number two, which is the second reading. Need a motion to approve the second reading and adoption of ordinance and 2017-001.
I'll move that we approve the second reading and adopt the ordinance 17-01.
I second that.
001. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All right. Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. So at 9:47, we will close the public hearing. Move on to item number three, which is requests and comments from citizens. Much like the earlier section, except for you can speak on any subject. 3 minutes, please just state the general locale of your residency. And we'll begin with Mr. Gray.
Sure.
Who will conclude his sentiments. So appreciate you coming this morning. And just before you begin, I think based on your resume, and you may not have given it all, but I couldn't write it all down, you might be a good candidate for the Cannabis Advisory Committee, and if you haven't applied, I encourage you to do so. Okay, great. I have not looked at the applications, so we will be reviewing them, I think, this week and looking to try to make those populate that committee soon.
Great.
So thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Thank you for giving me another opportunity, and I'm sorry for the confusion about the process. I'll keep this brief. I said most of what I wanted to say. So we support rules specifically targeting the offensive activity that is annoying to neighbors in Williams and around the county. We are also concerned about regulatory overreaction that will unwittingly penalize farms that are already licensed, operating in good faith with the best intentions. We feel like with careful deliberation, we can limit the damage done by unscrupulous development while also supporting right livelihood and rural economic development. And grandfathering in particular, I think, is necessary in order to protect current investment and potentially to protect the county from class action lawsuits. Thank you very much for your time and attention, and I hope that I'm able to lend my experience to the Cannabis Commission. Good day.
Hey, thanks. Anyone else? Yes, in second, third row.
I'm Lynn Standridge. I live at
Would you mind just saying that again into the mic?
Standridge.
Lynn?
Glenn, G-L-E-N-N. I own and operate Oregon Cargo Containers Incorporated here at Grants Pass. And I have some information that I'd like to share. Most of the growers use my containers, either renting them or owning them, to dry cannabis in and to house the security cameras and things that they need to go. As it goes right now, for me to rent these containers and set them down out there, the limitation of time that they can sit there on a temporary basis is too short because the season starts in June and ends in November. If we only have a 90-day window, that ruins my rental business altogether. The other thing is we do have some county ordinances now on tying down permanent containers, but it's not feasible to tie down temporary rented containers. It's just not feasible. We can pass that, and we did and all that, but it's not going to be adhered to. And I'm not a policeman. They come in and buy a container, I drop it wherever they want it, then that leaves you would assign somebody else to chase all of us down, so that's sort of ridiculous. The other question I have, and I don't want an answer today, I'm in the county. My business is on 7.5 acres, but I'm in the expansion zone. Do not plan on going into the city unless I have to, unless it's voted in somehow or another. So now when I call for inspections on something that I'm doing there, there's this push back and forth as to whether the county should inspect it or the city should inspect it. I can't get a clear answer from anybody because nobody has one.
I'd be happy to provide you one.
Great. Okay. First person that actually stood up and said, I'll be happy to figure that out.
No problem.
Okay. Other than that, the same thing, I just suggest that we kind of go slow. We don't throw out the baby with the bad dishwasher. There are some bad grows out there. I've been to where there's trash and there's no sanitary conditions and all that. That can be straightened up. But that doesn't mean that all these people that own R5 that are finally getting to rent some of it for some $35,000 to $100,000 a year can actually make enough money off of that on the rental to the growers that they can pay their up property taxes. They can actually have a decent livelihood. A lot of these people are older people, 70, 80, 90, been on that property for no telling how many years. So it's nice to see them to get some income out of that. If we restrict R5, that income will go away. And so will the taxes generated by it. But other than that, I have no more. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? Mr. Ford?
Sir, if you leave, you won't hear your answer.
Yes,
you do. Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. I think it's time for Justin and Jackson County Board of Commissioners to get together, put a letter together to send to the state regarding all these regulations. The state isn't, they're passing them with no ability to enforce them. I think, you know, I've mentioned before, some of that I think the southern part of the state is treated like the stepchild of the state of Oregon. We don't get much help down here, and we have issues because of the cannabis laws that no other county, with the exception of Jackson, probably have the same problems we do. It's time that the state step forward. If they're going to make these rules, and that they enforce them. And that's good. It has to be the state police or whatever. I mean, they're putting regulations and rules. They expect the counties to enforce that. We have no way to do it. And one thing, and I talked to a couple people probably next year, these ugly plastic fences need to go away. I'm sorry, there is nothing worse in this county that I've seen, and I was born and raised here, that has impacted the beauty of our county is black plastic fences. They're just terrible, and they don't serve any purpose. I mean, they really don't. I understand it was rules were set in when it was just medical marijuana, but quite frankly, I'd rather see a green plant growing than a piece of the plastic fence blowing in the wind. If we could get rid of those, I think that maybe the county needs to do it. That will state that we don't care what their regulations are. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes. Mr. Glenn, I'll get you next.
My name is Daryl Jackson. I'm a resident of Williams. And I'm here speaking for dozens of landowners and long-term residents in Williams that make their living from the land. And as such, we're very emphatically asking the Board of County Commissioners stand against the creation of an overlay district for the community of Williams. We believe our property rights and our very livelihood, our chosen way of life, is not and should not be anybody's business but our own. It is certainly not the business of amateur bureaucrats. We do not believe anyone but our elected officials should be involved in natural resource management, planning, and decision making. And by saying that. It's fortuitous we're here today because Julie's describing rules and regulations that are going to address this, but we do not feel that we should have an intermediary layer of government in Williams that is kind of overseeing this process. Further, these landowners are saying that no one should presume to speak for their land use issues. And what we're seeing in Williams is a group of people that are very concertedly pursuing this overlay process. And almost to a person, we've had to kind of scramble because we're not hearing about public meeting. We don't know what's transpiring with this group of people. And so we've gone door to door and approached people that are landowners, resource owners, forest owners, ranchers, farmers, and almost to a person, they've said, who is the Williams CAC? I didn't elect these people. And furthermore, they don't know what the overlay district is. But we're seeing coming very close to the passage of this, and they're appealing to the county commissioner saying they have a wide level of support, and I'm here to speak for these landowners saying that they have not participated in this process. So we feel it's flawed, and as mentioned earlier, I believe it's probably borderline illegal. So we're asking the commissioners to kind of intercede in this process and be the decision-making authority that we elected. We did not elect the CAC. And we have some documentation from the petition, and Mr. Gray's statement is included in this. And I believe you're going to get a communication from Shadowbox Farms, which is one of the larger recreational groves in Williams. So this is an across-the-board response that you're seeing, and I don't think you're hearing it from the CAC folks.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Anyone else? Mr. Glenn, I think you were next. I apologize. So normally we don't allow props or such.
Well, this is a reference for the commissioners, so they know what I'm talking about.
I think I'm going to allow this one. It seems pretty benign in nature. It's a map of the state of Oregon with some numbers on it for those just listening.
You're curious.
In. So.
Ron Glenn from beautiful Wolf Creek, Oregon. There's a small vocal group in Portland which says Oregon does not have enough wilderness. Yellow dots on the map represent 47 wilderness acres, 2.5 million acres of public land, or 3,868 square miles. Now, the reason I'm here today is because of the issue of wilderness in Josephine County. In 2012, Senators Berkeley and White came to Josephine County and proposed additional wilderness in Josephine County of some 50,000 acres from ONC land. Now they're back with a new proposal since they were unsuccessful, called the White and Berkeley Oregon Wildlands Act. And they're asking for that acreage again into wilderness. I think this is outrageous for them to do this. In 2012, when they came for their press conference, they hadn't even bothered to check with the county commissioners then. And I think, Mr. Harry, you were a county commissioner at that time. So I'm speaking in opposition to what they're trying to do. And I have copies of the act for each commissioner so you can see what I'm talking about.
Hi, my name is Karen Muir, and I am from Williams. I own a cattle ranch in Williams. I do not grow marijuana, but I believe that I better read my notes. I'm concerned about the CAC, Citizens Advisory Committee, that has, for some reason, reason decided that they need to be another layer of government. And I believe that you guys are doing a beautiful job, and things that the CAC has said they want to control, like all our resource lands, that's their word, all our resource lands in Williams. And once you guys came out with rulings on R5, now they're kind of like, well, we're going to go after the big ones. So they do say that they are coming at this as that they want to control the big groves coming in. And the problem with getting an overlay, which is what they are requesting, is that that gets their foot in the door for controlling all of our resources. And I'm asking you, first off, I'm complimenting you that you're doing a great job getting through all this. And I support you. I do not support a local group of volunteers that say they're tired and they're just volunteers to do something that's so important as far as writing rules and regulations. So we've got word somehow through the grapevine that they're going to be meeting with you guys tomorrow, and I'm wondering if that's an open meeting, if we can come to that.
We usually answer after your time is done.
Okay.
Every meeting of the Board of Commissioners is always open to the public, except for our executive sessions. But we start that way. It's open to public. That won't be an executive session. I'm not aware of a meeting tomorrow, but we may be having one. I don't see it, so maybe.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have a comment on that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, anyone else for something? I'll try to get through those things, and then we can answer, hopefully, we'll try to answer as many questions as possible. So I think, Councilor Hicks, you had a comment on perhaps a meeting. You may be aware of this.
Yeah, because the citizens are here, I thought I'd just clarify the point now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think tomorrow on the admin agenda under community development, there is ordinances, believe it or not, that are going to be discussed. And so I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be at the conference.
Yeah, that's right.
I approved the issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
it's, I
perhaps word has gotten around. I think it's referencing that item on the admin agenda for tomorrow morning.
But that is not open for public discussion, so it's just between Ms. Schmelzer, our community development director, who's bringing this issue for the board to discuss, and that's all. The Williams CAC will not be represented or have an opportunity to address the board at that one. They have come before the board before and talked about their issues. I think the presentation that they were getting at the point where they're at is looking to refer it to the Williams area and looking for that question of whether or not they should institute an overlay or request the board to. It's up to us as to whether or not we're going to. And they have chosen this this process on their own. It's not required by the board to do so. They're the only CAC that we have in the county right now, Citizens Advisory Committee, and they are just that, an advisory committee. They'd never be able to provide themselves the authority on their own fruition. The board can't delegate that authority to a CAC. It has to go through a very specific legal process that were prescribed by state law in order to do any land use regulations at the local level. So it's a pretty thorough, open process in order to get there. And frankly, in my estimation, I think you're right. It's adding a layer of bureaucracy, because if they were to go through a process, they would just be advising the county to initiate the process here that we would have to go through anyway. It's not bypassing anything. We can't short-circuit the system at all by having an overlay or a CAC. It would just be more, it's really not that much different than an organic citizens group getting together and maybe even petitioning the board to do something. It just might be a little bit, hopefully, maybe a little more organized and representative of the community. So they're looking to try to circulate that question, and their threshold that they've adopted was a two-thirds majority in order to achieve a recommendation by the CAC to the Board of Commissioners to institute an overlay. I'm not necessarily particularly fond of adding layers of bureaucracy. This is just me speaking on this subject as liaison to community development. I think the process of its own virtue has got built-in opportunities for everybody to be engaged, and it might present people having they might just get tired of if they had to go and be participants in a CAC overlay version and then go to the Rural Planning Commission's section of the process, and then the two first and second reading deliberations of the board and the ordinance adoption by the Board of Commissioners, you can see how that's a really long process. Expedited on behalf of the board, so giving specific instructions to Ms. Schmelzer, our Community Development Department, to bring back the process, we're looking at 5 to 6 months of our own asking, not of her fruition, and a very specific topic. So you can imagine instituting another layer, you're not going to get done with it in less than a year. And really, it was mentioned to try to get out in front of this thing from a grower's perspective and trying to give you clarity about the laws and regulations that you're going to have to comply with. We frankly have been doing our diligence and taking our time because this issue's been before the board for 2.5 years. I'm not waiting anymore. We are initiating this process. The board has initiated this process 2 weeks ago to just start it. And we'll refine it over time. And how grandfathering is issued and those things come about, I'm not really sure. And we've instituted another layer, potentially, or another advisory committee to kind of weigh in from the Rural Planning Commission side, not to substitute for their actions, because they're statutorily governed, to just provide guidance to them and the board with the Cannabis Advisory Committee. So I feel like we're trying to have every element in the equation lined up in a sequential stage, so everybody knows the process and feels comfortable about what opportunities they're going to be weighing in. The CAC may not have statutory requirements for advertising for public meetings the way the board, the county has, the Rural Planning Commission does, and we don't have a choice by those things. We have, you know, for this, we had to do 4 separate advertisements, I believe, in a local paper. It's on our website. Yeah, everybody is going to, it's time-tested, proven process for us. We're not making it up. And we have staff to facilitate it. So that's just my cursory review of that. I've got a couple other comments, but I just wanted to address that one. Oh, the cargo container.
Urban growth boundary.
Oh, you're going to have to get with me on that specific address. So if you wouldn't mind contacting the office, 474-5221. Our email and my email is on there. I've got a map that delineates the difference between the existing urban growth boundary, the newly adopted urban growth boundary, and the urban reserve. And so I was the commissioner who kind of led this effort through the 4 or 5 year process. I'm not really sure how long it was, but I was intimately involved in all of those. The only element that is regulated by the city right now are city limits and the old urban growth boundary. Right now, we have an interim IGA that facilitates how we're going to work through those things, and right now, the new urban growth boundary is still under county jurisdiction and code, and will be until we ratify a new IGA, which should have been done by now, but it's in the city's court. And at that point, that IGA will specify that these codes will apply to the new urban growth boundary, and there will only be one, but right now there's 2. And so I know it's confusing. It's confusing for staff, and I think that that's unfortunate because they should be made aware of this, and I think they're constantly being educated about this process. But I'd be happy to sit down and look at a map and say, you are in the new urban growth boundary or the old one, and I'll tell you exactly which regulations apply. I have no problem doing that.
Thanks.
So happy to provide clarification. I just need your address. So you guys want to...
Don't go yet. I wanted to address the containers also. I'm hearing what you're saying on the 90 days for sure being too short, so we'll look into that. One of the things that I would like to suggest to you while you're standing in front of me, because I was in the drive up there, is the color of the containers is what I'm getting complaints about. Orange and lime green and stuff does not blend in with the countryside. That's the only thing I'm getting, so I don't know if you can paint them a pastel color. It would help knock a lot of phone calls that we get back. Okay?
Yeah, we get some that are required to be yellow because of what they're going to be used for with
okay.
The fire departments and what. And we also get them for red, which are the same thing, emergency shelters.
Maybe we can engage with you on this because this issue isn't going away. We kind of want to discourage the back and forth because it can get into one of those. It's
That's my concern. Maybe I'll set a time to come up and see you.
90% of our containers are painted moss, which is a very
And I'm going to have to just say thanks, and we're going to get back with you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for coming today. That has been a reoccurring issue forever. I've got friends of mine that have tried to skirt the code. If it's on a foundation, it requires a building permit. Well, a permanent foundation by the code, and they've put rocks in a fence, and there's nothing permanent about that, you know. But that's what they're trying to do, to skirt the thing, put the shipping container on top of that. And I'm like, I don't know. The code is just so crazy. Anyway, anything else, Commissioner DeYoung?
No.
Commissioner Morgan?
I wanted to comment on one other thing. I have been scheduled to attend a Concerned Citizens in Williams meeting on the 11th at 6 o'clock at the Grange. So that's the only meeting that it showed up on my calendar, and so that's not this Friday, but next Friday at 6 o'clock. And so separate from something specific with the group that I wasn't aware of, that is something specific with Williams, and it appears to be a public meeting, so I want to make sure you're aware of that one. And Mr. Glenn, thank you for the wildland expansion information. It's interesting. We have, all of us individually, have meetings with Representative Walden today. And so that might give us an opportunity to speak with him about the item as well.
I also wanted to, Mr. Glenn, I spent a lot of time in Eastern Oregon, a lot of those dots. You know, that's, you're right. And if they just keep on running, I don't know how much of that, if you went back into the Eastern Seaboard and said, how much wilderness area do you have back there?
A lot. I mean,
well, Mr. Glenn,
to the Mississippi.
I didn't mean to ask the question. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I won't put it in the form of a question.
My fault, too. We'll just work it out. We just try to encourage that that's your time, we got ours, and we're going to get through this. So, we've got it on the books, Mr. Glenn, and you're aware of this, that the board is opposed to any redesignation or additional restrictions on federal land. That's pretty much how it goes, without consultation with the Board of County Commissioners. So we had a mineral withdrawal, and there was no consultation on that. We issued letters, we're opposed. We've issued coordination letters every year to all of the federal and state agencies that should be required to do so, to coordinate with the Board of County Commissioners and just say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing, and what are your concerns about this? Senator Wyden and Merkley didn't do it with the Siskiyou Crest expansion over there, about 50,000 acres, and that's being under review by Secretary Zinke. I think his report is due sometime later on this month, probably around the 23rd or something. I met with him 2 weeks ago, expressed our concerns about that from an ONC perspective. About 83% of that is ONC, federally designated by Congress land. And the President, in our opinion, in the 1942 solicitor's opinion, says he doesn't have the authority to redesignate this one. And so the ONC Association, along with Josephine County, filed litigation against Secretary Jewell, and now Zinke. It was one of the first six legal documents that he received on his first day getting into office. I said, well, Josephine County is probably responsible for two of those six pieces of litigation against you, sir. Nothing opposed to you. You just inherited a whole ball of worms. And so we're going to get, you know, litigation to refine that by a court to say, no, you can or you cannot do this. There was private lands included in that. I met with John Murphy, owner of Murphy Company, and he was unaware that his 2,500 acres or so was going to be included in that. He also filed litigation. And so it's just, it's not okay. There's ways to do this with local consultation. All of the Board of County Commissioners in Southern Oregon, Josephine County didn't have any specific land in that, but we were still had ONC land, which we are a party to. Klamath County Board of Commissioners was opposed to it. Jackson County Board was opposed to it. So when they say they met with local officials and everybody was in favor, just not real honest and upfront and truthful. So we're going to be pushing that issue till the cows come home and we get some change. That's just the way it's going to be. Commissioner Morgan is aware of each meeting with Congressman Walden later on today. Separate issues, not deliberating towards a decision, so it's not a violation of the open public meeting law. And I think we're gonna hopefully weigh into them on a whole host of different issues, from opioid abuse in Southern Oregon, and I've got the natural resource portfolio and other issues. So I've got family that's redheaded, Mr. Ford. I just don't know that they're all ugly. I don't know where that comes from, but it just seems unfair to a whole population out there. typically really pretty people. So we're gonna actually work on meeting with our local other elected officials. I think that's really important that we come about this from a regional standpoint. People can ignore Josephine County, and they do at the Salem and state level all the time. But I think when we band together, we have a better voice. We have a better opportunity to engage with our legislators and other members of the state house. So that's exactly the tactic we're taking. I'm vice chair of Region 4, and the cannabis issue is top of the list on issues we're going to be discussing here very soon. So, yeah, I think with nothing further, we don't have an administrative action calendar to review, so we're really just moving on to item number 4. I want to thank everybody for coming and engaging with the board, taking the time to visit with us. It's really important as your formal time to do so, but also remind you that you can send us emails, call us. We'll schedule specific meetings. We received an invitation to come out to Williams in that area, and I think members of the board are going to do that and have done that. We've got item number 4A on our calendar for the consent is various minutes of the Board of County Commissioners. Item 4B is resolution 2017-040 in the matter of an appointment to the Josephine County Fair Board. Commissioner DeYoung, will you lead us through this?
Yes, I'll go ahead and read this. Before the Board of County Commissioners for Josephine County, State of Oregon, in the matter of an appointment to the Josephine County Fair Board, resolution number 2017-040. Whereas it has come to the attention of the Board of County Commissioner that there is a vacancy on the Josephine County Fair Board, and whereas it is both proper and necessary that the Board of County Commissioners fill said vacancy by making an appointment as provided herein, now therefore it is hereby resolved that the following person be appointed to said Josephine County Fair Board with a term expiring as herein set forth. Mark Koberstein, appointed to 3-year term, said term to expire 1/1/2021. Done and dated the second day of August 2017 by the Board of County Commissioners. So congratulations to Mr. Koberstein. He's going to be a really, really good asset to our fair board. He comes to us from Clackamas County and relocated in Josephine County and has a pretty impressive resume. So we're happy to have him on board.
Extensive fair board experience in Clackamas County.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the interesting things is I think our fair board is populated with multi-generational people who have had extensive experience with the local Josephine County Fair, but we're probably pretty limited on the number of people from outside the area kind of providing that objective experience, and I think that's going to be real positive. So appreciate it.
Well, we also, just as a footnote, we have an opening that will be coming vacant right after the first of the year. So if anybody, we would just kind of keep an eye out for the notice for application for that.
We have a number of advisory committees at the Board of County Commissioners, so feel free to come by and look those up, fill out an application, and we will hold it in reserve for any committee openings and evaluating on that subject. So with nothing further, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar made up of items 4A and B.
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Thank you for your efforts on this. Liaison to the Fair, Commissioner DeYoung. Nothing further. Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Is there any other business that should properly come before the board at this time? If not, we'll move on to item number 6, which is matters from the commission. What matters to you, Commissioner DeYoung?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the brief meeting with Representative Walden, Congressman Walden. I think that's going to be, I'm glad to see that he's coming down here. I did happen to have an opportunity for half an hour with Senator Murphy earlier on in the year when he came here for his town hall. We had a very good exchange. He was listening and actually wrote a couple things down. Now, whether it transcended beyond the county line, I can't tell you that, but it was, the opportunity was there, and I was grateful for that opportunity. So I'm looking forward to the exchange today.
I am going to be meeting with all three of our public health related advisory boards in the next weeks. We've gotten them scheduled for Animal Shelter Advisory Committee will be Thursday night. Then on the 16th will be the EMS board, and the 17th will be the Board of Health, just to kind of give some updates on where we're at with some changes recently in public health and some recommendations of future vision for what's going on there. We had a recent departure of our director. She took a job with the Blue Zone Projects, a local group coming in to see how to make Grants Pass healthier. And with that,
we have an opportunity to evaluate where the public health services are coming from. What are critical services that we must provide to the community and have to provide, but what can be provided maybe in the private sector, what can be provided by other divisions. So there are some recommendations to move some of the areas such as prevention and tobacco prevention and community health workers that work in our high schools under our other prevention programs that already work in the high schools in prevention programs. So instead of having like-minded programs in two different departments, they will be moved together in one, so we're being more efficient with that. We are also evaluating our animal control officers. We are the only animal control office in the state where our animal control officers are overseen by the health department but are armed. About 50% of the animal control officers in the state are with public health and 50% are with the sheriff, but the line is usually if they're armed or not, and we're the only outlier. So we're looking at remedying that. And there are some other changes and different things that we'd be looking at as a potential moving forward. And the idea is that we are maintaining and keeping service to the community, that it is not going to at any point basically take away from the services to the community. That's important to us because the health and safety of the community is important. And we have to, there's things that we can't give away and we will not give away. We have to maintain them. So we're just looking at the structure right now because we have an opportunity to change leadership to do that and make sure that we're operating as efficiently as we can. Okay, I have a total random one for you guys. All right, so my grandpa passed away a year ago. And this year I've had four deaths in the family. So one of the things that I've been kind of fascinated is where I come from and heritage and all that. Yes. So this is fascinating to me. So I just yesterday in the mail received the death certificates of my great-grandparents, which gives extra information of my great-great-grandparents and such. So if a cousin of mine has been working on my mom's maternal side of the family to kind of see where we come from. But yesterday I was able to, she showed me this site called FamilySearch.org, and I was able to plug in on my maternal grandfather's family. And my great-grandma Lily, who I was named for, is a direct descendant of Benjamin Franklin. He is my eighth great-grandfather. And I am also George Washington's niece. So George Washington's father is my 12th great-grandfather, and all through my grandma Lily, which is just amazing to me. So I was in shock last night. So I was told to wash my teeth and to tell the truth. So
the Facebook post.
Yes, I was just, I'm like, oh my goodness, can you believe this? I was able to track a relative through them all the way back to 950-80. And so to be able to say, I have no idea who these people are. I just found that one of my ancestors was a general in the a brigadier general in the Revolutionary War. And so it was like, okay, what's his connection? Oh, wait, he's married to Elizabeth Washington. Could she be married or related to George Washington? So looking at who her father was, oh, he's the brother of George Washington. Oh, my goodness, you know, so I just have to say it's fascinating. I know there's a lot right now. You hear people talking about Ancestry.com and sending their DNA to see who they're with. Holy mackerel. I'm just still in awe. So, you know, sometimes some bad circumstances can lead to some interesting information. And so through the loss of several family members, just wanting to know more about history. And so that was fascinating. So I thought I'd share because it's just different.
With that lineage, my expectations for your performance.
As a stateswoman,
I'm going to get a little higher, Commissioner Morgan.
We have connections.
Hope you're prepared. That's really interesting. Thanks for sharing. Yesterday, so kind of an ancillary part of the job is to get out in the community from time to time. And honestly, kind of the workload for the last couple of years hasn't provided me the opportunity to do that as much as I'd like. But yesterday, I took advantage of an invitation to go visit Rogue Valley Sash and Door. And I had to leave a meeting early in order to do that to accommodate schedules and such. I wish we could have picked a warmer day, but I don't know that one exists, maybe till tomorrow. But it was really pretty toasty. So he opens the door to the boiler room where they steam the wood. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I want to see today in my suit and tie. It was real warm out there. But they employ over 300 people. It's the largest wood processor that we have still left in Josephine County, or have had for quite some time, even when Rough and Ready was still in operation. He's been here since 1968, the owner and proprietor, and just was reminiscing about the number of wood processors that we used to have in Josephine County and Jackson County when he first came to the area. And I just wanted to say that those kinds of things, you never know the immeasurable kind of outcomes that could possibly come from that. So right now, some of the high-value veneer that he's sourcing for all of his, a lot of his main product in his doors, they process 4,000 doors a week over there, and it's pretty amazing. He's sourcing that wood product from Canada, and so I ironically had lunch with a new forest manager yesterday from Lone Rock Timber Company. They only own about 1,000, manage about 1,000 acres in Josephine County, but over both counties, Douglas and Jackson, they manage about 130,000 acres. And so looking at what their portfolio had, and I brought Dave Streeter with me to that meeting with John Duncan to try to say, is there an opportunity that Josephine County can help you source that wood locally, employ more people, and have that value-added element coming right from the region? We may not be able to supply him. We only manage a 30,000 acres, which produces about 6 million board feet a year, and he uses about 3 million board feet, and it's a very special high-quality wood that he veneers to make for high-quality doors. But between this gentleman I met yesterday with Lone Rock and his predecessor that now operates a timber company up north, we're going to try to source all of his wood from Morgan and do that in a short order. Mr. Duncan moving his whole operation out to the Spalding mill site, and that just means for more quality jobs in the state of Oregon, and making those connections is really what we do during our job, but it's that other duties is assigned. It's not part of our day-to-day, but I think it's really, that's the underlying economic development opportunities that we all try to take advantage of every day. And it's not specific to the wood products industry. It could be in any sector. I wanted to express that as something. Those are the things I wish we had more time to do, but this is a job that really is 24/7, 365 as a commissioner. And it's not easy, but it's a pleasure to serve with these three fine people who are willing to lean into complicated, challenging issues. Commissioner Morgan making progress on the public health department. We've gone from being $300,000 in the red about 6 years ago to now we're in the black, and we're still looking at ways to partner with the community to become more efficient and provide better care to the clients that come to public health and through our CCOs and different other health providers in our community. I feel like we're making phenomenal progress on many different fronts, and sometimes we do the worst job of telling our story. And we're going to be leaning into that effort and try to tell our story of the things that we are doing and our staff is doing, our managers and other elected officials. And that's top on our list to try to figure out how we can better provide you guys the information so you get the bang for your buck story. You're not worried about where your county tax dollars are going. You feel good about it, so, and you should. We've become really, really efficient over the last several years. So. But nothing further, I think we're going to call this one adjourned. Next week, we're looking to have our weekly business session out in the county, something we haven't done in my tenure. We're going to be out in the Illinois Valley, so tune in. We're going to be there at 5:30 in the county building, located at, I think it's 102 Redwood Highway or something right down there. Feel free to join us out there, or hopefully we'll be able to videotape that, and we'll have that up on YouTube to broadcast.
Did you just say something about the Illinois Valley?
I said 5:30, where we're going to have our meeting next Wednesday.
Okay. So I also want to bring up that tomorrow night, 7:30, 8 o'clock, there's going to be candlelight visual for public safety in Cave Junction.
Great. Good program. Okay. With nothing further, the board is adjourned at 10:29. Thanks all for attending.